Learn more at stoptextsstoprex.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. KPFT Houston.
What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. And I have to add that it is not only the only storytelling show originating in Houston, but it is also an award-winning storytelling show. And it's right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Edgerton, a.k.a. Dr. E., and along with an ensemble of gifted hosts, Dr. Hank Rubicek, our show's founder, Greg Audell, appearing with Floyd the Wonder Dog, and yes, as I say every time, that is Wonder Dog with a capital W and a capital D, and Dr. Warren Holloman, our master of wellness in the community. Well, we would be nowhere without Tatiana Gago, our chief production engineer and media director, and you will hear more from her later. Well, here we are in September, and a new school year has begun. I have three students as my guests from the University of Houston downtown to share with us some college stories. Just how did they end up there? They are Ricardo Orico Enriquez, Jonathan Mosley, and Heidi Lozano. All three are Houston natives. Jonathan and Heidi will both be first-generation college graduates for their family. Rico is a close second on that one. His sister is first for his family. So, welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much.
Very exciting to have you all here. It's always wonderful to have young, new blood on the show. Our show, as I mentioned, is all about storytelling. Stories take you on magnificent journeys in which you experience life through someone else's vision and experience. We will safely take you on several journeys in just a moment, and I promise by the end of the show, we will bring you safely back. Heidi, let's take our first journey into Storyland with you, but first let me tell our radio audience a few things about you. Heidi Lozano is a Greater Texas Foundation scholar. She is majoring in health and behavioral science. Heidi started a psychology club at University of Houston downtown, fondly referred to as UHD, and is the vice president. Well, Heidi, are we all some part of a big psychology experiment here?
No, but you could be.
Yes, I almost feel like it's being planned. People are taking notes. They're talking about us. Now, tell us your story. How did you end up deciding to go to college, and how did you end up at UHD?
Well, many of us college students share many things, one of them being fearful of not being successful. As for me, my fear has always been not getting to be to become a doctor. You hear so many stories that most times it gets to your head, and all I would hear is that getting into medical school is difficult, but at the same time, not impossible. And it still brought fear to me that I would be one of those people who didn't get into medical school. My fear started during my senior year in high school. It was time to decide which school I would attend. I looked into UHD and decided to work on a biochemistry major. Once the semester started, I was excited because I thought this was the start of my long journey to become a doctor. But at the same time, I was afraid on what is buzzed to come. many people knew my passion for medicine. One of my mom's friends, who I always talked to regarding my academics, spoke to me about Chamberlain, which is a college for nursing. It sounded interesting to me, so I decided to take a look at it. Once I saw how it was, I decided that I wanted to stick with my goal, which was to become a doctor. I didn't want to stick with something that I wasn't pursuing in the first place, although in my head, there was this little voice that said to me to just pursue nursing and get everything over with it. But my heart would say the difference. After I decided I wasn't going to take that route, it was almost time for school to begin, and I had to go see my advisor for my classes, who suggested me to major in something else, and gave me time to decide on my decision. I felt very disappointed, because I felt that she couldn't see my capabilities. So in a way, it felt that if she couldn't see what I could do, then how a board of directors was going to see me? How would they compare me to other applicants? I was terrified. Just thinking about it, the fear of not being able just increased even more. As time went, a couple of days later, I went to her office and I told her I had made my decision and I was going to study for psychology. I chose psychology because it was science related and I thought that in some ways it will help me in the future. I thought to myself that she has experience in these things and has helped students to get into medical school. Therefore, she had to know something. She had given me her approval and the classes to take, so I went along and followed it. The fall semester started, and I was scared that I had made a mistake and that it was going to make me fall behind in the stuff that I should know for the MCAT. As I took my classes, I saw that I liked it, but I didn't love it. I wasn't passionate as I am for science and medicine. So I decided to change major, and I went for health and behavioral sciences. This major made me feel that I was learning more about the medical field. It made me feel more confident about myself because I knew what I was doing wasn't a waste of time, because it was information that I would be using in the near future. It helped me when I have to take the exams for medical school and gave me the knowledge about medicine. Despite my major change and how good I was doing, I still had that fear. The fear of not being able to be a doctor, not just because of the statistics of people who didn't get into medical school, but because someone didn't see me as a capable person to pursue a science major. As of now, I still have that fear that I won't get an opportunity to be a doctor because it's highly competitive, but I don't let that get in my way of my schoolwork. And despite the statistics, I will try to pursue my goal. As in right now, I feel like my classes, they're going great. I'm doing better. I'm doing actually great. And I'm up for the challenge that is to come. And whatever it takes to get into medical school, I know that I'll be capable of that, despite of the thoughts of other people who didn't see my capabilities.
That's a wonderful story. I think your determination is really wonderful.
Thank you.
Do you have any idea what kind of doctor you might want to be? And that is far into the future. And I have to tell you, I'm a doctor, and I changed my mind probably 6 or 7 times in medical school. And a couple of times in residency. So don't worry about changing your mind. But have you thought about it?
I've thought about it. I feel like GI, it's something that has drawn me more. So general doctor would be good for me. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that, it's a great profession to be, say, a family practitioner. You do quite a bit. You know, my grandmother was the first female Hispanic physician in South Texas.
It was amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Her name was Dr. Mary Headley Edgerton, and she graduated as Dr. Mary Headley in 1910. Her mother came from Mexico and her father came from England.
Wow.
And so she was bilingual. In fact, her mother never became an American citizen and never learned how to speak English. But you'll make your own story. Yes. Mary made hers. I made mine. you're well in progress in making yours.
Thank you.
So, Rico.
Yes.
We've heard a story of, from someone who's really had an idea of what she wanted to do all her life, and it's been more about convincing the people around her that, yes, that's what I'm going to do. So, what's your story?
So, my story, huh? Well, I remember whenever I was younger, I would always get the same question, as I believe a lot of children did. What do you want to be when you get older? And as a kid, I had tons of answers for this. I wanted to be an astronaut, a race car driver, a police officer, a circus clown, all at the same time, preferably in the same day. And so those answers rolled off my tongue very simply because at the time, I didn't care. It didn't mean anything to me. And through the years, I realized how much that question would take a toll, not only on my mind, but the people around me. It was basically a weighted lead vest on my chest. So in elementary school, I got bullied a whole bunch. And it was because I was bigger than everybody else. People thought I flunked and I failed. And eventually I learned how to defend myself both mentally and physically in those times that I needed to. But all the while I was thinking in the back of my head, I needed to pass these tax tests. Back in my day, it was tax tests. I think it's Teeks now or Frog in the past. Can't remember. Don't know.
We didn't even have them in my day.
Okay. Well,
there was a time.
So that was always in the back of my head. I didn't want to fail. I didn't want to prove these people right. So the further along I got, the more I kind of proved that I'm not dumb and I'm in the same grade as you, regardless of what you think. Middle school comes around and it's pretty much the same thing, but I'm trying to learn where my place in the world is. I'm trying to figure out who my real friends are, what friends are in general. I was in middle school and I remember I had a teacher tell me that I reminded her of the Virginia Tech shooter.
Oh my God, that's a horrible thing to say to somebody in middle school.
And that was when it just happened too. And that was my first taste of an adult being against me. And then after that, I started feeling like the world was against me as well. I was still getting bullied for other things, but I was still finding my way through popularity, and it was always this back and forth. High school comes around, same thing. And where I was hanging out with my friends, laughing and getting into a little bit of trouble, the trouble I was getting into in high school actually led to pretty substantial consequences. And that's when I started realizing that I needed to do better. But even then, I had teachers telling me, you're not going to make it. You're just going to end up in prison or jail or in a ditch. And one of my personal favorites, just shut up and I'll pass you. And so, of course, that sounded like an easy ticket to graduation, which is another thing that people didn't think I could do. And I also had tons of classmates think that I was just some nobody class clown. Nothing was ever going to happen to me. And I was mad. And I remember my dad telling me, yeah, you like to act like the bad boy, and maybe girls like it, but no one likes the dumb kid. You got to do better. So I took as many college-level courses as I could, and I started passing them with flying colors, and everything was just falling into place. I joined wrestling, and so anytime anyone had something to say to me, I would point either to my grades or the mat. We can handle it either way. And as college started rolling around, and I did graduate, I wanted to do a lot with my life. I wanted to be a graphic designer and create video games. I wanted to go to AI, the Art Institute. When I heard how expensive it was for either a semester or a year, I knew that wasn't in my ballpark. I knew I couldn't afford such a thing, which also meant I couldn't afford Rice University. I couldn't afford UT Austin. But my grades also reflected that as well, because I kind of didn't take it seriously. Even though I did pass, I didn't care. So when college came around, I thought it was only going to get harder and that maybe all these people who doubted me were going to be right. Then life happened after a couple years and I witnessed death firsthand. And because of my grief, I didn't know how to cope with it. And I lost relationships, both romantic and platonic. And so I had this sense of loneliness that I couldn't even comprehend. And I was a psychology major. And I thought, this can be overcome with therapy and other things and proper techniques for dealing with it. And eventually I just thought, I can't be at a community college for long, which is where I was for a while. So after 4.5 years, I decided I wanted to go to university. And mind you, I hated school my entire life. The first day of school or the day before, I was always crying because I didn't want to go back. I really didn't. But I didn't want everyone else to be right. I had this anger and this rage and also this fear at the same time, this anxiety. And so I started picking up my GPA and I decided to transfer to UHD. And what happened there is I changed from psychology to communications for what? I don't really know. But it started working out in my favor. I got offered an internship at UHDI Radio, and I did that with as much perseverance and determination as I could. And eventually led to me becoming the station manager, which is what I'm doing now. And even though nobody tells me anymore that I can't do something, because the proof is in the pudding, it's in my paperwork, my resume, I still doubt myself. But I know now that it's a healthy sort of doubt where I want to prove myself wrong. Everyone else has been proven wrong at this point. What do I care? I even worked at a retail shop, and they thought I was only going to be a cafe barista. Long story short with that, I was tons more than that. I climbed the corporate ladder aggressively, vehemently. And so now where I am, I can't believe the people I've met, the things I've done, the events I've spoken at. And I kind of laughed to myself because I always thought success is the best revenge. And if that's the case, I've been salting the earth every step I take, every day I live, you know? So, yeah, that's a little bit of my story. So nowadays, I still think, what am I going to be when I grow up? Does anybody really know? I'm not sure that they do. What kind of person are we going to be in 5 or 10 years? Who knows? But I think since we keep trying, that's a good little bit of revenge.
That is a great bit of revenge. And I think it'd be great if that teacher who told you that you reminded her of the Virginia Tech shooter actually heard that. Hmm. So maybe she's listening tonight.
Right.
So you're about to earn your degree in communications, is that correct?
That's the plan.
Yeah, and you are currently the iRadio station manager.
I sure am. Give us a listen.
Yeah, I will. That's wonderful. That's a great story. These stories keep coming back to the sense of anxiety. Do you think graduation means that the anxiety will be resolved?
No, I think I at least will always struggle with where do I fit in? What's my purpose? Very existential.
Well, you know, there is something called imposter syndrome, where so many people make you believe that you can't do something that you feel that even though you're in a position of responsibility that you're just a fake. So don't let that get to you.
Yeah, they're next on the list.
Absolutely. How about you, Heidi? Do you think that graduation will relieve that anxiety?
I feel like it'll relieve part of it, but some anxiety will still be in there.
Well, I will tell you, as a physician, anxiety is a little good for doctors. You know, you'll be running codes, you'll be deciding what somebody has, and a little anxiety is a good edge. You want your doctor to have a little anxiety and to be a little obsessive compulsive.
Yeah, that's true.
Just a little of that thrown in. Jonathan, I know you haven't spoken yet, but do you feel anxiety? You're coming up to graduate, and we'll introduce Jonathan in a moment.
I am. I believe no anxiety is ever done until that individual feels like they have reached that point of destiny for their lives.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little short story, and then we're going to move on. My mother came from a little town in Texas, and all these people were local farmers and ranchers, worked in stores, etc. And oil was discovered. And these people who had worked all their lives really just to survive and keep a roof over their heads were suddenly millionaires. And then she would tell me, well, they became alcoholics, and then so-and-so shot his wife and killed himself, and then so-and-so, and I said, all these people got rich. You know, I was a kid. How did this happen? And she said, sometimes if you don't have something to try for, if everything you ever thought was the answer is given to you up front, then you don't know how to go on with life. So it's always good to have the next, you know, even if this works, the next thing that I'm going to try for. So like I say, anxiety's a little good. Okay. The important thing is that you are keeping on. And Hank is going to read a story for us that a student wrote about keeping on, keeping on in the face of adversity. Hank.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. Yeah, that, great stories, guys. Really, you guys are doing a great job.
And just add.
I know all of these people. Obviously, they're in my class. We're not saying that, and I don't like to admit it, but they're doing a great job.
They are. And Hank, you told me earlier today something I didn't realize. You're the first member of your family to graduate from college.
I was, absolutely. First generation. Yes, I was. And it was sort of a chilling series of episodes getting to that point because the pressure was on. The pressure was on. You know, my family told me that, listen, don't take this personally, but if you don't go to college, you'll probably be a failure. Now eat your dinner. You know, things like that. And I lived like that, and I lived with that kind of pressure. But, you know, that's okay. That is all right. I think that people who are first generation experience something that most others don't. You know, the book Outliers, great, great book called Outliers, talk about these first generation of people. In my generation, your generation, Mary, you know, somewhere between 1952 and 1965, people went to school and they achieved great things. And there isn't really a reason for that other than the fact that they were motivated by individuals who wanted to help shape their self-concept, you know. This story, if I could just say a word about the story first, has something to do with that. You know, this story was delivered by a student of mine from a storytelling class, and all three of these people were in my storytelling class, so they know what I'm talking about. And this is a young man who said he didn't have a story. Now, that's important to recognize because everybody has a story, right? He didn't think he had one. And I asked him about the nature of the story, and he said, well, I gave this story to my family first because I was really mad at them, and I asked him what that meant and why that circumstance was so significant. So he said, can I just tell you the story? And I said, absolutely. So this is the story that he shared with me, and this was the story that he told his family. I'm really mad at all of you. You know, you're my family, and I love all of you, but I need you to know that I'm really angry. I'm angry because this is my father's anniversary of his death. And on this anniversary, I feel really compelled to tell you how I feel about you, because you didn't let me feel the grief that I needed. I need you to know why. I did everything with my dad all the time. You didn't know him that well, but my dad was my best friend, and everything he did for me and around me. He spoiled me. He never punished me. My mom grounded me. She was the one who grounded me, if anybody had to ground me, because she was the one who was bold enough to do it. But you know, anything I wanted, I got from my dad. He was kind of a sap in a way, but he loved me so much, and I saw that every day. But you know, he was always hopeful. And he told me that he was going to always come home at 5:30. All of you know what I'm talking about, because for over a year, he went to the hospital every week for his chemotherapy, and he came home all the time at 5:30. 5:30 was an interesting time because he came home not only from his treatment at 5:30, but he also came home from work every day at 5:30. And I would sit on the front stoop waiting for him, and he was never late because my dad never lied to me. But the night that he died, all of you need to know what happened. I was at my grandmother's house playing video games with my cousin Gabe, and she told me that she just got a call from my mother and I had to go to the hospital. I wasn't really worried about it because my dad, again, always had treatment and he always came home, but she seemed worried. So I went to the hospital, and when I got there, my mom hugged me in a very strange way. She was afraid of something, and she had tears in her eyes. There were different kinds of tears. And I asked her what was wrong, and she said, it's your dad. And I said, well, Dad's here, but he's always here. He has cancer, but he's going to be okay. And my mom didn't say anything. I wasn't worried. My dad came home at 5:30 every day, and I thought that would be the same. He'd come home that day at 5:30. But then the doctor came out, and I didn't like the way he looked at me at all. He told me that my dad was in a coma, and that the rest of the family felt that it was time to take him off of life support, and how I felt about it. I said, well, why are you asking me? And the doctor told me that I had to decide as well. It had to be a consensus. I had to agree as well about taking my dad off of life support. I was really angry because I didn't know what to do. My dad never lied to me. He was coming home that day. I knew it. But I also knew that he was ill. So I went into his room and I looked at him, and he looked awful. And I knew that he was never coming home. I saw it on his face. I saw that he was cold. I saw that he was distant. He didn't look like my dad. So I walked out of the hospital room and I told the doctor and I told my family, okay, I guess it's time to take him off of life support. And they did. And all of this time, I feel that he died by my word. And I'm mad about that. None of you really know what I went through that night, and that's why I'm angry. You never let me talk about it. You never let me share that grief. And I'm doing it now. And I had to drop out of school because I was a mess. But you know what? My dad always wanted me to be in school, and I'm going back to school. I don't know how, because I'm still a mess and I can't afford it. But I'm going to give it my best shot. I've got a job, and I'm going to just do the best I can because I know that he would want that. But I need all of you to know something. Every day, on the front stoop, I'm sitting there at 5:30. And I'm waiting for him because I'm mad at him too. He never lied to me. Except for now. Because he's not coming home at 5:30. And I know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a little hard to say something.
Yeah, and it well
to follow that. That's
it
very.
Was, I understand it. I was in tears, and I looked at him, and you know, I told him, Thomas is his name, Thomas Torres, and I said, you know, Thomas, don't ever, ever, ever come in telling me you don't have a story. I'm going to smack you silly, because that was ridiculous. That was one of the best stories I ever heard at the time, and it still is, and it was so raw, and it was so sequential, you know, and. When he told me that it had to do with school at first, as you might imagine, I never expected that. You know, Mary, you made a great point earlier. You were talking about the imposter syndrome, which I thought was a great point, you know, about Rico. And this young man, I think, did not suffer that. He did not suffer that. His father had a great definition of who he was, and they had that kind of relationship. And whatever debilitating emotion this young man had, it was this story that gave him clarity and showed him how much he loved his father, if that makes any sense. I think it made him a better person and a better man.
That's a great legacy that his father left for him, one of love and motivation and belief in him.
So I appreciate the chance of sharing that with you.
Thank you.
You think about college stories, and you don't really think about that, but it was during a time when college was tough. He couldn't concentrate. He dropped out of school, and he was going to get tough and go back because of his dad.
Hey, everybody here and in Radio Land, I'm going to interrupt this moment to take us back to reality. Just a few minutes for station identification before we take off again into Storyland. So just keep that feeling on hold that Hank has left us with. This is Mary Edgerton on So What's Your Story? We are live here on KPFT Pacifica Radio, 90.1 FM on your dial here in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville, and KPFT.org live from anywhere in the ether. Tatiana, tell us about the venues around H-Town for storytelling.
Of course, and venues we have plenty of. Our radio show is So What's Your Story, and we have been on the air since 2008. And if you don't own a radio, that's not a problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and Facebook Live. Visit us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page and share with all of your friends. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave. So What's Your Story is also on Facebook and Instagram, and we pretty much are all over the place. And we are sponsored by Houston Storytellers Guild. They are a great place of amazingly supportive storytellers, and the Guild's monthly swap is a great place to learn about the art of storytelling. It is held the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, and that is located at 1500 Sunset. The next monthly swap will be on October 26th, and you can visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. For information about upcoming events, one of them is this Sunday, San Antonio Storytellers Annual Workshop. If you are up for a drive, check it out. More info is on the Guild's website. And while you are visiting the Guild's website, take some time to listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs. Every show since 2008, all listed on the menu under Radio Program. There are well over 450 of them, so you better get started. And our friends at The Moth have a show at Warehouse Live on the second Tuesday of the month, which will be this coming Tuesday, October 8th. The theme is spooky. Something tells me we are rolling into the ghosts and goblins this time of year. And in fact, the Guild will also have its annual Halloween storytelling event, Skyline Screamers. Ghost Tales Under the Stars at Marmion Park. That's in Heights Boulevard at 18th Street. And that's going to be on October 26th. And guess what? On Halloween itself, we will be on the air with So What's Your Story. Just getting goosebumps just thinking about it. So from now till Halloween, you are set with the second Tuesday at The Moth, the fourth Tuesdays at The Guild, and every Thursday at 8 p.m. Tuned in to KPFT for some grand storytelling. And next week, Greg Aldell and Floyd will be hosting Brendan and Tim McNulty, father and son authors of The Meanest Man in Congress, a biography of Beaumont's late Congressman Jack Brooks. The McNultys will have a book signing from 5 to 7 p.m. at Thursday, just before the show at the River Oaks Bookstore, across the street from Lamar High School. So join us again next Thursday with another set of cool tellers, only on KPFT Pacifica 90.1 FM Houston. And to everyone out there, we want to hear from you about your program ideas or comments for any one of us on the show. You can just shoot us an email at story@kpft.org. And I promise we will get back to you.
Thank you, Tatiana. October is going to be a busy month. So start marking your storytelling calendar now. I just want to mention to everybody once that for a moment here, that the last time I was on the show was during a fun drive, and we set a record for the number of call-ins during our show. I want to thank everyone out there listening to us who made that phone call and put us on the map. It was a cool, cool night for us, even though the theme was heat. Hank, offhand, do you know how many people called in, how much we raised during that hour?
I don't remember offhand, Mary, but it was an awfully busy night. I want to say 11 or 12.
Right.
Yeah,
and
it was a really great night.
And I think
night.
Our
was
goal was
night.
Something like 400, so we were almost
we
three
were,
times our
yeah,
goal.
We
that
really,
was very
we
exciting.
Were, you know, and I got to tell you, we have the best listeners in the world, and all of you know that because you are it. But, when it comes to Fun Drive, people care about the show. They care about what we do, and they know that we really are the icon of community radio.
And you received an award for that. But now, let's get back to our journey into Storyland this Thursday. Jonathan Mosley will be our next teller. Jonathan is majoring in corporate communications. He has had a very important role in the UHD community in that he goes out and records stories from communities in Houston to make sure that their culture and history is preserved, one of those being the north side of Houston. I just have to say, I think that's a remarkable thing to do. I know that the National Library records stories to preserve the culture of the country, but the fact that you're going out and preserving the culture of specific neighborhoods here in Houston is a remarkable point. And actually about Houston as a storytelling center. Okay, but coming back to you, we just had a very poignant story about a father's legacy of motivation for his son. So, what did you think about that?
Well, there is a quote. Hill Harper says in his book, Letters to a Young Brother, he says, "You are the perfect product of a 1 billion year evolution." And I remember a time when I was at a family gathering, and I was sitting with my two of my great aunts, two of which who are the only two left of my great grandfather. And he instilled so much into our family. And one of the things that he did instill into us was our Christian faith. And they looked at me one day and they said, "John," because that's what they called me, "you are going to be someone powerful." And me being the inquisitive guy that I am, I pondered that for a minute inwardly. And I said, powerful. That's interesting. And they looked at me again. One of them said, "Yeah, because, you know, you have so much going for you. And it's about continuing a legacy." And they took me back to a conversation that they had with me about my grandfather and how even though he instilled Christian values into them, he always wanted them to go for what they knew. He instilled such a drive in them. And they looked at me and they said, "John, it's in you. It is so in you." I said, okay, instantly. I got so nervous to the point I felt like I was being immersed into a pool of water. Like everything in me shook. Everything in me shook to its very core. And I literally felt like I was immediately on a roller coaster. You know those rides where you're at the top of the peak, and when you finally goes down, it seems like it's everything in the pit of your stomach literally comes out of you. And so I pondered. I said, "Amy, tell me what you mean." And she said, "Everybody in this family has a desire for their grandchildren, for their children, and for their great-grandchildren to go and do and be the best that they can become." She said, "But you have overcome such great odds, being the third of three children and having cerebral palsy and even having trouble just getting into the earth." I was like, and you know, sometimes you really don't think about things like that. And so I said, you have a point. And she said, "John, you're just going to do us proud. I just know it. You're going to do us proud." And I thought about that. I said, man, it's about legacy. All these years, you know, you go from class to class and college to college trying to figure out, and everybody has to have a plan set in stone. But for me, it was about legacy, because my great-grandfather was a minister, and I too am a minister. He was a great voice during the civil rights movement, and he went to Washington, D.C. and spoke in front of Congress and did all of these things. And here I am working with government, working in the community, and I too am a minister. So I said, man, it is about legacy for me. So even though, of course, you know, you have plans of going to college and doing all that you wanted to do, that fear in me stood up and said, are you worth it? And will you really do them proud? Will you do them justice? And instead of it crippling me, I let the fear drive me. Like, okay, I have to do this. I have to do this. Because I understood that what I was trying to accomplish, it was bigger than me. It was bigger than my thoughts. It was bigger than even my goal. Because for me, as it has been instilled into me, it's about preserving generations and preparing those that are to come. So that's my goal, is to prepare generations to come. As we look out and as we even march across the stage, many of us don't even know what's next. But for many of us, that's the beauty. You don't know. It's a journey. So don't let the fear of what's next grip you, rather than taking charge of that fear and say, whatever comes my way, I'm ready for it. So for me, I am the product of a 10 billion year evolution. And that is what drives me.
I love that line. You are the product of 10 billion years of evolution. That's, I'm going to borrow that and use that again sometime. that's just a wonderful statement. And your story of coming to realize that you are this legacy, you can be this legacy. And then you also, Rico, coming to realize that all the naysayers before, you've overcome. Heidi, where are you going to go to medical school? Because I know you're going to get accepted.
Thanks.
Okay. We have listened to some really remarkable stories and some serious and poignant stories. I know you guys are all very hard workers and about to graduate. But I am going to ask you real quick, because everybody's got to have some fun and laugh once in a while. What do you do for fun? Heidi, let's start with you.
I like hanging out with friends and family, like going out to places, visiting new, you know, places where there is here in downtown, like going to the museum, the aquarium. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. You know, they just had a great show at the Museum of Fine Arts on Icons of Style. Talk about some beautiful women. There was a picture of Beyonce, whom I know Jonathan Mosley is a fan of.
Yes, he is.
that was a great show. That's a wonderful thing to do. Jonathan, what do you do?
I like to go bowling.
Oh, you got to tell me. Are you one of those high-scoring people?
No.
Oh, okay.
I get beat every time.
I will bowl with you because I only bowl with those bumpers. And even then, my score is usually in the tens.
Yes.
Okay. Rico, what's your fun thing?
Well, it's changed over the years. I used to do a lot. I think on a past show with Rubicek, I alluded to the fact that I used to go out a lot. Bars, parties, clubs, all those different things. Now, I just mind my own business. I stay home and I try to stay away from people just because we don't get along sometimes. It's stressful being in traffic, you know? It's hard.
Yeah. I have to introduce you to my trainer. You remind me a lot of him.
Sure.
Okay. Since we're on a little lighter note, because we've had a really wonderful set of stories of hope and sadness and anger, let's hear a humorous piece about college life from Hank. He's going to read for us.
Yeah, Rico was nominated most likely to take a life when he was in Garage.
You're not wrong.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
Very good. You know, this is, now I got a bunch of these, but I just thought this was a lot of fun. Every once in a while you find these books in bookstores called What Students Do in Class, Goofy Things They Say. This isn't in a book, but it ought to be. This was written by a young man named Kerry, and I have his permission to share this. He's sitting in a history class. You got this? He's sitting in a world history class, all right? And rather than taking notes, this is what he's writing down while his professor is lecturing. You got that? Here's what he's writing down. He says, "War, war, and more war. Listening to this guy is like watching the Hitler Channel. War, door, whore, core. Coming up with words that rhyme. Bore is good if you add an R-N-G. Four. If you want to count or play golf, adore, not this blanking course. SOAR, sitting on my butt listening about war. SCORE, lore. That reminds me, I have an English paper. That class sucks too, but less than this one. The Civil War. The Cold War. How cold was it? Chilly? Freezing? Icy or just cool? Cannons and rifles and grenades. Hooray! Bullets and gunpowder. Who cares? War. More war, you stupid whore, who I adore to the core. Lenore wants more war. Oh yeah, snore. How could I miss that one? It's how I'm feeling now. Score. Probably a 64 on this exam. 64 the score on war on quiz number 4. But what if my name was Thor? Poor Thor and his ugly door behind the store that I adore. He thinks I'm taking notes. I am taking a note as I float on a boat by a goat with a very sore throat. Eating an oat that I got for my tote. Grab my blank, and that is it. And now you know what the previous word was, right? Because he's rhyming. So don't have a fit. Just get up and get, you twit. He continues to talk and talk for an hour or more about dates and battles and the GD Cold War. The 60s with hippies, so this guy always says, played music, smoked dope, and ate lots of Pez. Okay, I say. Those days seem real cool, but now we're in a class in a 21st century school. I'm out of here, bro, and not looking back. I'm tired and beat, and I'm hitting the sack. I'll study this blank, so don't have a fit. Oh, my God, he's still talking to us. Time is up, crazy man, so go catch your bus. Okay, there you go. I thought it was brilliant. This is totally brilliant.
It was,
This is totally brilliant. How do you come up with this poetic slash prose piece while you're sitting there listening to this guy, you know? And he got an A in this class, too, I asked him. So what can I say? I just wanted to share that with you because it was clever, it was brilliant, and by golly, I wish I would have done this.
He should publish that.
I am. Yeah, I'm going to try to get it in. Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking for some music about college to play as our closer, and I came across Kanye West's song about... and I can't carry a tune, so I'm not even going to try. And I paraphrase everything, but it was about getting rich in college. What college? I never even went to college. And it just some of the banter is a little reminiscent of that. So he should turn it into a rap song.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be great.
But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot different than that last story I read. But you know what? That emotional range is... Well, that's what these wonderful, wonderful students are all about. They really have this great range. And, you know, I've been teaching for 41 years, and I'm always amazed at the things they come up with.
Yes, that's wonderful. I'm going to go around the table here and let everybody just give us a little chance. We're going to go the other way. We're going to start with Rico this time. You've all told us great stories. You're all great storytellers. I just want to tell me... Is there a storyteller in your family that's passed on this talent, this storytelling culture to you?
I hope my mom's listening because we joke about this very often. But she's the talker. She will talk to nobody and everybody at the same time. And if you ask her what she said, she's just going to keep on going. She never really tells stories, though. We never sit around her at a campfire or anything and listen to her, but... When we travel and we're crammed up in a hotel room with her, she could go on for hours. No one prompts a question. No one says anything to her, but we'll just hear her in the background. And we've lived with her for all of our lives, right? So we've grown to ignore her. But it's always funny when she does grab our attention. It's usually very forcefully, if not physically. And the thing she says to us, we just think, I thought you were just talking back there by yourself, minding your own business. And she always comes out with some crazy story about, you know, who she didn't allow to finesse her or, you know, scam her. Usually airports and ticket sales. So I'm always appreciative of that.
That is good. And you will find as time goes on that you know your mother through her stories.
Yeah, definitely.
How about you, Jonathan?
I have several people. But the two that I mentioned, my great aunts, because they carry with them such great legacy. I mean, I'm a guy who loves the older generation. I could just sit and listen to their stories and their experiences all day. And these ladies have so many stories in them about our family, about history, just about life in general. And it will always come back around about how God kept them. So and they've been my go-to for stories.
You know, you need to record these, actually, both of you. And when we get to you, Heidi, because my father was a great storyteller and always told stories at dinner. And I remember shortly before he died, he had a bunch of stories about his time in World War II. And I just wish that we had recorded them. Okay. Heidi.
I would say my grandparents. I feel like they're more experienced in telling stories since, you know, they really didn't have that much of technology. So I feel like they had more time talking to people. So stories was something that they would enjoy to do more, especially with family. So for me, my go-to for storytelling would be my grandparents, because they can be very creative with those, and it's always exciting to know those.
Okay, now that you have told us who your inspiration was, we're going to go around the table. See, you didn't realize there's your professor of storytelling right over there. I'm going to have each one of you give us an impromptu story. So we're going to start this time with you, Heidi. And you get to choose from pride, trust, or conviction. 1 minute. Pride, trust, or conviction. Which one do you want? 1 minute.
Ooh. I'm glad you're going first.
Yes, you're going first, so you guys are making up your stories.
Luckies. I guess I will say trust. Trust.
So the story?
Okay, so it was a cold night. I wanted to go to my house. I was very tired, very sleepy. I had a long day, and all I wanted was just to go to my bed and just call it a night. My mom had told me that we were just going to go to this last place. And I was like, okay, I'll, you know, just do my nap, my sleep later on. We go to this place, she does her little shopping, go in, and we come out with nothing. So I was like, oh, well, I just came out with nothing and no sleep. I was excited to go home. I trusted her that she would just go to that store, but I see she takes another route and she goes to another place, another store. And me thinking the house is the other way. And I ask her, where are we going? She says, I just need to go get something at this place. I was like, okay. We go in and she comes out with nothing. So I'm like, two places, nothing on her hands, and an hour of no sleep. And that's my trust, when she told me that she was just going to go to one place and get something. And she went to two places and didn't get anything.
Some trust.
She has a good daughter. Okay, you. 1 minute. Pride, trust, conviction. Take one.
Conviction?
Go for it.
Okay. When I was in high school, there was always this group of what they call jocks in high school, if you will. And I would always, just by my own inclination, because I was popular, but I was a nerd, if that makes sense. And I would just be so fascinated at all of the girls and the attention that they would get. And I would get so intrigued. And so it happened one day we were at lunch and one of them said, let's go to the field house. And going to the field house, that normally means that you're going to smoke or do something you have no business doing. And something in me, I was like, it just didn't feel right. Not that I was a nerd, not that I felt like I was better than anybody. I just, you know, it's just that I had something just didn't feel right. And I looked at, I think it was three of them at the time. I said, I'm going to catch y'all later on this one. I got, oh, Jay, you a bum, man. I said, I catch y'all later on this one. Because my convictions of knowing right and wrong, and not even, and they knew the Christian lifestyle that I live. It was my love for God. And I'm trying to be an example to y'all. So how would that look? You know, so I said no. And my convictions,
right.
And we're still friends to this day.
Oh,
because of my convictions.
Well,
so.
That's good. Well, we're going to give you 1 minute here, Rico.
All right, let's see if I can do it. So I'll just go ahead and take the last word, pride. I think to kind of tie everything together, we've had a lot of pride to continue on and to face the adversities. And me specifically, I think as many rough and tumble things as I've done and experienced, as many hardships as I've faced that maybe other people will never face in their lifetimes, I think the pride to know that I have kept going and that I can keep going should echo in other people, that it's never as hard as you want to make it for yourself. So keep going, have some pride, and really just put that fire under you.
That's a nice one. All right. Well, it's been a wonderful night, but it's time to come back to IRL. I have to tell you that means in real life, because I just found that out last week. But don't you dare move, folks out there, because Lars and the Tennyson Tape Deck is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters. Make 90.1 a part of every day while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling. Join us every Thursday at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, a.k.a. Dr. E. Oh, and I have a new name at work, The Edge. And along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we never want you to forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
If you decided to donate your birthday to KPFT this year, thank you. If your special day hasn't yet arrived, consider donating your birthday to KPFT. Here's how it works. Facebook sends you a prompt before your birthday asking if you'd like to donate your birthday to a nonprofit. Select KPFT as your organization of choice. Then add a personalized message so that your friends know how much KPFT means to you. On your birthday, they'll receive a Facebook notification asking them to make a donation in your honor to KPFT. Thanks again for supporting 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, Pacifica Radio for Peace.
The 2019 local station board elections are underway. If you donated a minimum of $25 or volunteered 3 hours between July 1st, 2018 and June 30th, 2019, you should have received either an email ballot, a postcard, or paper ballot. If you haven't, then fill out a ballot request form on elections.pacifica.org. Members without access to the internet can leave a voicemail for the election supervisor at 510-854-9663.
Paper ballot replacements will be issued through October 7th. All ballots must be received by October 15th, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to be counted. It's 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston and online at kpft.org.